Welcome to the Master Your Health podcast. My name's Amanda Rocchio, previously Amanda Meixner. I am best known for my meal prep and nutrition content. And today I'm here with my co-host, the research junkie between the two of us, and my husband, Chris Rocchio.
Hello, everyone, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to all. We're actually recording this podcast from St. Louis. Chris's parents are scrambling to get ready for Christmas Eve. Meanwhile, we're recording this podcast from his bedroom.
Yeah, we decided this was going to be a good time to do it right when my parents are scrambling for a Christmas Eve party. So yeah, it should be fun. If you hear any random noises in the background, just ignore it.
Parents yelling at each other to get stuff organized.
Yeah.
Mike!
Yeah, you
just
hear
kidding.
That a lot.
Before we get into our podcast today, I wanted to read a 5-star review from one of our listeners. Her name is Anna WLI. Fun podcast that motivates you. I love Chris and Amanda. They're such a fun couple that's very passionate about health. Their podcast is full of tips to get more active and incorporate small changes that add up to a big difference. I discovered them through Instagram first, and now I listen to their podcast while meal prepping. What a good combination. I love listening to podcasts while meal prepping.
Yeah, it's my favorite.
So if you could take a moment to leave Chris and I a review, it'd mean so much to us. And let's get into today's episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so today we're going to be talking about the sauna, its many benefits. I know Amanda and I love it. We have a portable infrared sauna in our house. And Amanda, you love it more than I do, don't you?
It's like this bright orange box that like looks kind of funny to be inside. It's just your whole body's in it and your head's out of it, but it's very convenient to do it from home. I know my gym has a sauna, so you know, if your gym has a sauna, I would encourage you to use it, and you'll find all the reasons why you should be using it after today's episode. And I really have to give a shout out to Chris on this episode. You know how I always intro the podcast is he's the research junkie? Well, he really went deep into the information and studies behind the sauna and the benefits today. He's very diligent, almost a little too diligent, I swear.
Yeah, I get into a little bit too many, let's say mechanisms behind all this. Maybe you don't want to hear all this stuff, but you're going to get it anyway.
No, you're going to appreciate it because it's nice to understand the benefits, but also what's going on inside the body. So maybe there's other ways besides the sauna in the future. We might be able to hack these mechanisms. So I love that Chris will go into that in detail later on. So I'm going to go ahead and start with the overview on the sauna. So here's the deal. People have been sitting in hot tents in rooms since ancient times. You know, it's kind of been thought of as a spiritual purification, healing, cleansing. That's kind of the connotations around sitting in these hot tents back in the day. And what it actually gives you is mild hyperthermia. So it increases your body's core temperature. It activates the nervous system, cardiovascular system, endocrine system, nervous system to work together to bring the body back to homeostasis. So an equilibrium of bodily system. So really, you're heating up your body and your body's working extra hard to keep, you know, the insides and everything at homeostasis. So your body's working extra hard while you're in the sauna. It also preps and strengthens the body for the future in case your core body temperature rises again. So we're so used to being inside where the temperature is really regulated at around the same temperature because we have air conditioning in the summer and, of course, heat in the winter. So kind of mimicking what we would used to do by going outside and actually being in that heat because we didn't have so much of this modern technology around us. Mm-hmm. So this type of stress on our body is what's known as hormesis. So it comes from the Greek word meaning to excite. So exercise, for example, puts stress on our cells. This has some applications in the field of toxicology, but for now, we'll just stick to this. What we're going to get into further is heat shock proteins. You can't talk about the sauna without talking about heat shock proteins. Heat shock proteins are the gatekeepers of cellular homeostasis, preserving integrity under stressful conditions.
Yeah, recent evidence suggests that heat shock proteins play more than an auxiliary role. In contrast, they have been seen as more of central lifespan determinants, and their malfunction has been associated with the manifestation of certain neurological disorders, cardiovascular disease, and cancer malignancies. So, to kind of elaborate on what that really means, we're going to talk about heat shock proteins, their role in the body, and what triggers them. So obviously, we talked about the state of hormesis, you know, how small stressors in the body can create an adapting effect to the positive, to a benefit. So production of high levels of heat shock proteins can also be triggered by exposure to different kinds of environmental stress conditions. And these are things like infection, inflammation, exercise, exposure to toxins, starvation, hypoxia, which is oxygen deprivation, nitrogen deficiency in plants, or water deprivation. So just to show, excuse me, just to show how effective heat stress is in increasing heat shock proteins, one study showed that 30 minutes at 163 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 73 degrees Celsius, increases heat shock protein 72 by 49%. Heat shock protein 72 is just a specific protein, and each one has different effects, different abundance levels, so we'll get into that. But another study showed that heat therapy for 6 days increased heat shock protein 70 and heat shock protein 90 by 45% and 38% respectively. And just to let you know that the 70 variant of that protein is the family that is most abundant. So obviously you're going to get the greatest effect from what we're about to talk about here. So as a consequence, the heat shock proteins are also referred to as stress proteins, and the upregulation is sometimes described more generally as part of the stress response. They have many jobs in the body, such as, you know, cellular processing, cell signaling, immune function, and cell cycle regulation. They also have developmental roles in the embryonic and juvenile stages of mammals. And one of the most important things that was recently discovered is that they serve as what's known as chaperones for other proteins. And so they basically stabilize and facilitate proper transporting within the cell. So in transporting, I'm meaning transporting proteins. So this is important because proteins have numerous jobs in the body. I mean, they're responsible for communication between cells, delivery of certain molecules such as oxygen, their catalysts and chemical reactions. They are a huge component of the immune system. They perform all biological functions of the cell. Okay, so the heat shock proteins have a monitoring role for these cells' proteins and those different functions that they have. And they play a role in the cellular stress response, meaning that they carry old proteins to the recycling bin, so to speak, and help newly synthesized proteins fold properly. And, you know, I know a lot of this is jargon, but just assume that proper folding of proteins is a good thing, and we'll just go from
yes.
that.
Couldn't agree more.
So when our cells create proteins from the instructions in our DNA, sometimes things can go wrong, during normal metabolic processes, and they are misfolded, right? And then other times, proteins can get denatured from oxidative stress, you know, physical trauma, mitochondrial damage, oxygen deprivation, and other stresses in the body. So basically, there's a lot that can go wrong with proteins within the cell, and increased expression of heat shock proteins can prevent these things from going wrong by repairing proteins that have been damaged. And this increase in expression isn't only caused by extreme heat. Again, it can also be induced by fasting or hypoxia. And there's also evidence to suggest that this may offer protection against neurodegenerative diseases. We're going to talk more about that later, but these are things like Alzheimer's disease and dementia and things like that. And lastly, they are also involved in autophagy, which is cell death, programmed cell death when cells aren't dividing properly and functioning properly. So they play a role in the cardiovascular and immune system as well. We don't want to get too deep into the weeds here, but for the sake of time and flow, we'll spare you the science on these systems of the cardiovascular and immune systems, because it's just kind of heavy and heady.
Well, I found that really interesting right now, because first of all, that obviously indicates that you do want more heat shock proteins. I mean, probably not all the time, but you want to be, you know, having those turn on or increasing those heat shock proteins on a regular basis, from what I can tell from everything you just described, and also just helping the healthy formation of the protein, but mm-hmm. also getting rid of the unhealthy protein cells, basically.
Right. And we haven't even talked about the specific benefits that translate to, you know, like the goals that we're trying to seek out in life, you know, but these are just main overall got a kind of comprehensive functions, but we'll talk about these roles later and how they translate into actual benefits that you can see in real life. So,
well, I appreciate you for going into the weeds on that. I knew they would increase while you were under heat, but I didn't understand exactly what they were doing. So this is very enlightening.
Right. And obviously, you know, if you want to get more into the weeds here and you want to know about the certain mechanisms, you know, the specific enzymes and the specific, you know, proteins and all this other stuff, you can look up Rhonda Patrick. She's the one that turned me onto this on a Joe Rogan podcast. And she just has an in-depth knowledge of the benefits of sauna. So you can look into that. But for right now, Amanda's going to go through the methods that were used in some of these studies before we get into like breaking down the studies, and you just so you know the protocols whenever you decide to actually try this stuff out.
And before I get into that, I just want to say that Chris loves mechanisms, so I could nickname you Mechanism Man. You love it so
much. I
know,
I need to reduce the amount of times I say that.
So before we get into all the benefits that were studied in the studies we're going to go over, I'm going to talk about, you know, what temperature and how, you know, what types of sauna did they use, et cetera, so you know what's going on in these studies. You know, it's not just they turned on the shower really hot, right? A traditional Finnish sauna has dry air, so about 10 to 20% humidity with high temperature. The recommended temperature for sauna is usually from 70 degrees Celsius to 100 degrees Celsius. So that would be about 158 degrees Fahrenheit to 212 degrees Fahrenheit. Optimally at 80 to 90 degrees. So, okay, in that range, which is about 176 degrees Fahrenheit to 194 degrees Fahrenheit at the level of the user space. Finnish-style sauna bathing involves 1 to 3 sessions of heat exposure lasting 5 to 20 minutes each, interspersed with periods of cooling. The KIHD studies that found a dose-dependent reduction in cardiovascular-related mortality, all-cause mortality, and Alzheimer's disease incidents typically involve saunas that were heated to a temperature of at least 78.9 degrees Celsius, that's very exact, 174 degrees Fahrenheit, for at least 20 minutes. So we also look at some studies on infrared saunas. Infrared heaters emit thermal radiation, which heats the body directly, sort of inside out, rather than heating up the air and heating up your body from the outside in. They operate at lower temperatures than traditional saunas at 45 degrees Celsius to 60 degrees Celsius. So that's the type that we got last year. Chris got that for me for Christmas, but I think he kind of also got it for himself a little bit.
Well, of course. You know, absolutely.
No, sharing is caring.
That one goes up, I think, to 150 degrees Fahrenheit. So that's the max temperature.
And okay.
It takes a little bit to get up there, but, you know, it gets brutal after about 40 minutes.
Yeah, I also found so... Right now, we just don't have enough space for a full sauna, so your head isn't in it. But so do what you can with what you had. Our infrared sauna, your head is outside of the sauna. But ideally, of course, you have the full sauna where your head and your body's in the sauna. But like I said, using a sauna is better than not using any sauna. So just to tell you a little bit more about our sauna, you also can have your arms outside. There's like little holes. Again, it's like this box thing. You can see it on one of my older posts on Instagram. I was dancing to the song. It's getting hot in here. A little bit embarrassing, but also a lot of fun. You know, sometimes we'll read a book while we're in the sauna. You can do computer work. Chris likes to try to keep his arms inside the sauna when he can. Or I don't know, what do you usually do inside our infrared sauna?
Yeah, I mean, I mostly like read a book or I'll pull something up on my computer and then and read that. And so it's like sitting on a table right in front of me. But yeah, I do like to keep my arms in as much as possible. I also like to, there's a little, it's crazy. I actually have it collapse in on myself. So the area inside the sauna is smaller. So it heats up a lot faster. And so it gets hotter faster. So I'm in there for, you know, a higher temperature for a longer duration, you know, just small little hacks or whatever. But so by the time about 30 minutes in, I can't really concentrate on anything else because I sweat very easily. So I'm like dehydrated and it's pretty brutal for me.
Yeah, I don't sweat really easily, which is another reason why I love the sauna. I mean, sweating is so good for you. If you heard our detox podcast with Tyler, he's very much, you know, like sweat is one of the ways to get rid of the toxins in your body. So you know, that's why trying to use the sauna wherever you can, whenever you can, is super important.
Absolutely.
And we actually got our infrared sauna off, I think you might have got it off Walmart, but there's a ton on Amazon. So there's different ones. They're actually pretty price friendly. So if you don't have anything in your vicinity, consider getting a portable infrared sauna.
Mm-hmm.
Getting into a little more info about the steam sauna. So in a dry sauna, the relative humidity is low, 10 to 20%. A steam sauna where the humidity is extremely high, typically greater than 50%, keeps sweat from evaporating. A wet sauna may feel hotter than a dry sauna and is harder on the cardiovascular system due to the reduced evaporation of your sweat. I actually sat in the steam sauna today because I've been feeling a little stuffy and it felt really good, but I can tell that it does feel a little hotter at first, but and I can't really stay on in it as quite as long as a dry sauna.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, I only stay in the steam sauna for about 5 minutes, but that was also probably because my lungs are just destroyed. If you guys haven't noticed, I'm a little under the weather right now. I feel like crap. I've been really sick since we traveled. Something blasted me. So bear with me because I'm a little bit, I'm dragging right now.
Well, you're a champion for getting this podcast in. I appreciate you sticking to it, baby.
That's what I do.
All right, getting into some more of the benefits of the sauna. Chris, take it away.
Yeah, okay, so this is where we get into the nitty-gritty, and so strap in and just bear with me because you know, we're going to go through a lot of studies and a lot of mechanisms, but there, I said it again, but...
get out your notepad, friends.
Yeah, no, this is good stuff. So first, we're going to talk about NRF2. So we've already discussed some of the benefits of heat shock proteins in general, but another factor activated by heat exposure is NRF2, which is found in our cells. When activated, it regulates a network of genes with protective, antioxidant, and anti-inflammatory functions. These genes protect against oxidative stress, electrophilic stress, and chronic inflammation. And that, you know, as we know, chronic inflammation is the primary underlying cause of most diseases. So obviously that plays back into, remember I was talking about how heat shock proteins being a central lifespan determinant, you know, this is one of the factors that we were talking about at the beginning. So next, moving on, is something called FOXO3 proteins, FOXO3. All right, and these are proteins that play key roles in lifespan and aging because they regulate a number of genes that protect cells from damage to DNA and other proteins. And they also increase production of genes that regulate DNA repair, tumor suppression, stem cell function, immune function, and protein aggregation. The reason this is important is because FOXO3 forms a specific enzyme that influences aging and longevity after the body experiences heat stress. So saunas will activate that as well. And on top of that, people who use the sauna frequently were found to be 40% less likely to die from all causes of premature death. And this was held true even when considering age, activity levels, and other lifestyle factors that affect overall health. So this is really promising in terms of reduction of all-cause mortality and promoting longevity. So getting into cardiovascular benefits, because this is crucial, being that cardiovascular is one of the leading causes of death in the country. So the World Health Organization estimates that nearly 18 million people die each year from cardiovascular disease, and roughly one-third of all deaths worldwide. Cardiovascular disease is largely preventable with lifestyle behaviors. So one of those, obviously, being exercise and sauna use and everything like that. So during sauna use or moderate exercise, your heart rate or blood pressure will increase immediately. And after the sauna or exercise session, your blood pressure and heart rate begin to drop to baseline levels, and which are, you know, measured before the sauna or the exercise. So like exercise, long-term sauna use generally improves blood pressure, endothelial function, and left ventricular function, and reduces inflammation. All good things for the cardiovascular system. Moderate sauna users, which is about 2 to 3 times per week, are 27% less likely to die from cardiovascular-related causes, and frequent users are 50% less likely to die from cardiovascular-related causes.
That's crazy. That's a big stat.
Yeah, so that's, you know, frequent would be 4 to 7 times a week. So what's interesting about this is that the benefits associated with the sauna are what's known as dose-dependent, meaning that they increase with the frequency of your activity. And so it kind of plays into the whole idea that lifestyle factors and different activities can contribute to either, you know, chronic disease, or they can contribute to you know, more healthier benefits in your life. And so it's I really like this small aspect to prove that point, right?
You also want to remember, of course, something is better than nothing.
Right.
Doing it 2 to 3 times per week is better than not doing it. Mm-hmm. And then if you have time, or maybe it's dependent on your schedule, like you have a crazier week, so you only do it once that week, but then your schedule is a little more lax, then you do it a couple more times. So just make it work for you. But I do like that in this case, you know, the more days, you know, of the week you can get into the sauna, the better, clearly. Right.
Frequent sauna users were found to be 40% less likely to die from all causes of premature death, regardless of age, activity levels, and lifestyle factors. So that's dope.
That's super dope. Another reason to get in the sauna, make it hot.
There were two studies done with infrared dry saunas that showed improvements with congestive heart therapy patients. One demonstrated improvements in the patient's endurance, heart size, and disease status, and the other showed a reduction in number of premature ventricular contractions, which is a type of abnormal heartbeat, basically. And both of these studies had had control groups that showed no changes in comparison, so it's promising in this area as well. Several other studies showed improvements for patients with coronary heart disease, peripheral artery disease, dyslipidemia, which is abnormal blood lipid levels. So concerning hypertension, which is chronic elevation of blood pressure, there was a study that showed improvement with this as well. So men who use the sauna 2 to 3 times per week were found to have a 24% lower risk of developing hypertension. And those who use it 4 to 7 times per week had a 46% lower risk. And obviously, some of these studies, that, you know, we have some double-blind controlled studies, and some of them are observational studies, and some of them are, you know, like I said, epidemiological studies, things like that. So, you know, a lot of these studies will be in the show notes, and you can go through and check out the methods of each one. So keep that in mind. They're not all double-blind, and there are association studies. So
that was very convincing in my book, though.
Right. I mean, it's pretty
promising.
It's not like something like a diet study where you have a lot of different factors, like a diet observational study where there's so many variabilities, you know, right? Like you can pretty much track your sauna use a lot easier than you can track your diet.
Absolutely.
Okay. So, concerning inflammation, and obviously we know that inflammation isn't always a bad thing. You know, it's you know, part of the immune response. It happens from things like injuries and infections, but can also happen as a result of exercise and positive stressors. So like I said, it's not always bad. Like, for instance, I reduce the amount of anti-inflammatories I take before and after my workout, because there is beneficial inflammation that happens during your workout and you don't want to inhibit that. But then there's chronic inflammation, on the other hand, which occurs on the cellular level in response to different types of stressors. And that is a major cause of chronic diseases like cancer, cardiovascular disease, diabetes. And one substance produced in response to inflammation is called C-reactive protein. And high levels of this are associated with cardiovascular problems. So a study of more than 2,000 men in Finland showed that CRP levels were inversely related to the frequency of sauna sessions. So the more frequent the sauna session, the lower levels of CRP. And that's a beautiful thing. And then there's the cognitive and mental health benefits.
So people always ask me why I'm happy all the time. Maybe it's because of the sauna.
I think, no, that's just your default mode.
I know, I'm just kidding. But I'm sure that helps, you know, add to the positive brain benefits that I got going on with my lifestyle. As you can see from these studies written here that I'm about to read to you. So there is a protein called brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDNF. If that isn't a mouthful, I don't know what is. And so BDNF promotes the growth of new neurons and muscle cells. It plays a huge role in reducing anxiety and depression for trauma when you're young. And as you can guess, heat stress and exercise increase the expression of BDNF. And since BDNF promotes the growth of new neurons in the brain, it also helps prevent cognitive decline. An observational study in Finland showed that middle-aged men who use the sauna 4 to 7 times per week had 65% reduced risk of Alzheimer's compared to men who only use it once per week. This was another study that showed the benefits of sauna bathing to be dose-dependent. It also showed that men who use the sauna 2 to 3 times per week had 66% lower risk of dementia. And men participating in the KIHD study who used the sauna 4 to 7 times per week were 77% less likely to develop psychotic disorders, regardless of dietary habits, socioeconomic status, physical activity, and inflammatory status, which is measured by C-reactive protein. Wow.
Yeah, that's amazing. The fact that, you know, you don't have to have all of your other lifestyles in order. You know, you could be a little bit less disciplined in these other areas of life and still get the benefits, which is a beautiful thing.
Let's not count this as a magic bullet for anything, though. But
yeah, let's not use this as a get out of jail free card. You know, I mean, there is some balance, and you don't want to be able to be like, oh, I can do whatever I want, and then just go to the sauna and I'm chilling.
No, absolutely not. But it's just something to add to your routine, and maybe if you're not getting as good sleep or you're not eating as well, then even more reason to add the sauna in a few times a week.
Right, and what I love about this is to reiterate the dose dependent factor of this is that, you know, you may not get to a sauna 4 to 7 times a week to where you're getting 77% less likelihood of psychotic disorders, but getting there a couple of times a week is still going to show some benefits, which has already been shown in these studies. And so yeah, I mean, I think that there's no reason not to, or at least to try to get in there.
When it comes to depression, there's also been several studies done on the sauna and how it's shown improvements in depression symptoms as well. For example, a small randomized controlled trial involving 28 people with mild depression showed reduced symptoms in participants after 4 weeks of sauna session compared to the control group, which received bed rest instead. Other studies showed that increasing core body temperature had an acute antidepressant effect and increased levels of IL-6. What's IL-6, Chris?
Well, this is why I didn't want to get into the weeds, because it basically dampens the inflammatory response through the activation of this other substance called IL-10, which is a potent anti-inflammatory cytokine. So basically, anti-inflammation.
Got it. All right. Well, we won't get into that too much, but a lot of promising benefits when it comes to cognitive and mental health and depression. So get in the sauna.
Yeah. So staying with the mental and cognitive benefits of the sauna, we're going to talk about focus and attention. And two key factors in that are norepinephrine and prolactin. So norepinephrine enhances focus and attention, and prolactin promotes myelin growth, which is a crucial part of repairing nerve damage. So there was a study showing that young men who stayed in a 176-degree sauna, which is 80 degrees Celsius, until exhaustion, increased their norepinephrine levels by 310% and prolactin levels by 900%. That's 9 times over. Levels of cortisol were also slightly decreased. And women who participated in a 20-minute sauna sessions experienced 86% increase in norepinephrine and 510% increase in prolactin. That's interesting. I wonder what it is that creates the increased response in men, in relation to women. But that I did not cover, so we'll have to look into that. And this is extremely promising for ADHD patients, because one of the things that that happens with kids with ADHD is that their norepinephrine response is blunted with from exercise. So they don't get the same benefits of norepinephrine from exercise that a non-ADHD patient would have. And actually, norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors are prescribed often for ADHD patients. So this mechanism could be extremely promising for, you know, treating and reducing symptoms in children and even adults with ADHD. But there needs to be some more studies with that. It's pretty preliminary, but
that's really cool to think about, though.
Yeah,
a much more natural way to treat ADHD and help kids kind of focus a little bit more.
Yeah, if you're trying to wean them off of the stimulants that are prescribed by that, and you know how that downregulates, you know, certain neurotransmitters and things like that, you may want to start introducing the sauna and see if it improves some symptoms.
I remember hearing a story about a friend who actually has family time in the sauna. So he gets his whole family into the sauna. You're off your phones, you're there together chatting. It's a nice little community experience that you could do with the whole family, you know, once kids are a little bit older.
Oh, nice. We need to build a sauna so we can do that.
Absolutely. I can't wait.
So this is one of the most fun parts right here, especially for you athletes and gym rats, because it concerns growth hormone, performance, metabolism, muscle mass, things like that. So
if you didn't know, Chris is a gym rat.
Slightly.
Just a little bit.
So saunas promote growth hormone release. And this is another one that's dose dependent. So meaning that it's depending on the duration, frequency, and it also depends on the temperature used. So two 20-minute sessions at 176 degrees Fahrenheit separated by a 30-minute cooling period doubled growth hormone, and two 15-minute sessions at 212 degrees Fahrenheit separated by a 30-minute cooling period increased it 5 times over. So that's pretty interesting. And actually, if you do exercise and saunas together, you have a synergistic effect, and they compound. So if, like, say if you do a sauna session after a weight training session, that could be very beneficial. But you also have to take into consideration that insulin decreases hormone levels, growth hormone levels, right? Or I would say it inhibits growth hormone. So you don't want to spike your insulin with, like, say, a bunch of whey protein or a high carb drink or meal directly after your workout if you're looking for the growth hormone effects. If you're doing it, like, say if you do it directly after your workout, you used to drink a whey protein shake. Well, you don't want to do that before you go into the sauna. And since these growth hormone levels are elevated by 2-3 hours afterwards, you may want to you know, fast those 2-3 hours afterwards, and maybe just drink some amino acids, which won't spike your insulin, but you're getting, you know, you're getting some protein for muscle protein synthesis. So that's what I do. I usually just do some straight amino acids, no carbs, and that seems to be beneficial.
That's the only time you won't see Chris downing a protein shake right after his workout, as if he's going in the sauna.
Directly after, even though the
literature out there.
That protein window, like the 30-minute window, is just bonk. But for some reason, I still immediately after have to take amino acids or protein.
So if he's not doing that, just know he's heading towards the sauna.
Exactly. And so if you have a discipline for it, 2 1-hour sessions at 80 degrees Celsius, and you'd probably have to build up to this because it's extremely difficult. So 2 1-hour sessions at 80 degrees Celsius, which is 176 degrees Fahrenheit, dry heat per day for 7 days straight, increase growth hormone levels 16 times over by the third day and persisted for a few hours after. So this is absolutely amazing to me. I mean, I still can't believe this. And, you know, I've tried to do that several times and I just cannot stay in there for an hour. It's extremely difficult. But like I said, if you can, absolutely do it. Because like I said, I'm an extreme sweater. Like I have hyperhidrosis or whatever that's called, you know. And so I'm literally destroyed after 20, 30 minutes at that temperature. But if you can stand it, try it and see if it works for you.
Just know yourself. Like, don't push yourself to exhaustion so you pass out in the sauna. That's not safe. But it was an interesting study. But this is definitely for someone who's more acclimated to heat and who likes to take the intensity up to the next level. Because I don't know if I could even do that, and mm-hmm. I don't sweat that easily.
Yeah, and I mean I imagine that it might even be more difficult for people that don't sweat, since sweating is the cooling mechanism. And so I'd have to see some evidence for that. So I'm not sure. But you can also get improvements in your athletic performance. So one 30-minute session twice per week for 3 weeks increased the time it took for participants to run until exhaustion by 32%. And researchers also recorded a 7% increase in plasma volume and 3.5% increase in red blood cells during this.
So I'm pretty sure in this study they did it after their workout, right? That's how you have to increase your workout?
No, you do it as just part of your protocol. So you don't have to do it directly after or whatever. Let's just say that you usually run, right? But at a different part of the day, you're just in that sauna session. And that sauna session increases your tolerance for endurance, right?
Yes, that makes sense. By increasing your heart rate,
right.
And
so
all
it doesn't
those.
Have to be directly before or after. It's just like another practice session, but that's an extremely efficient practice session that is increasing your ability to handle pain and exhaustion and things like that. So
okay, that makes sense.
Basically, because you know you've been in the sauna. For those of you who have been in an extremely hot sauna, there's that moment where you're like, I should get out, and then you just push through and you stay in, right? And so a lot of people can't push themselves past that point of pain. They don't like that level of discomfort, and it just compounds the longer you stay in. Like once you hit a reason of like, oh man, I'm uncomfortable in a sauna, 5 minutes later, you're miserable, right? And so like some people have a higher tolerance for that, but it does build, you know? And so that's basically what it's exposing and what it's showing you there. And as far as metabolism, there's evidence to show that repeated use of infrared saunas significantly lower fasting glucose levels, which suggests there's improvement in insulin sensitivity. So if you're, you know, pre-diabetic or insulin resistant, that may also be a huge benefit to you. And our last two are muscle mass maintenance and detox. So Amanda, you want to cover the muscle mass maintenance?
When it comes to muscle mass maintenance, when you're injured or sedentary, you can lose muscle mass from lack of use, called atrophy.
So this is another one that I'm extremely interested in, because I experienced a lot of atrophy when I hurt my leg. I tore my ACL and broke my tibia, and all of my muscle mass in my left leg just deteriorated. And I didn't know the protocol at the time to keep this muscle here and to maintain it. And so it just withered away, and my legs, I mean, I just have bird legs now, and I can't get them
back. That's not true. You do not have bird legs.
Relatively, I have bird legs. Okay. So maintaining muscle mass requires a balance of protein synthesis, which you can get from exercise, and protein degradation, which you can get from both exercise and not exercising and not using. So it's kind of crazy. Like it takes a lot more work to keep, you know, to maintain that muscle mass and not you know, have it deteriorate or whatever. Because like I said, you can overtrain, and overtraining can create, you know, a state called catabolism, which, you know, you can break down muscle mass and use it for energy. And so that's what I'm talking about by protein degradation. So so you got to keep that in balance to maintain your muscle. And so what, you know, these studies have shown is that heat acclimation may reduce protein degradation by increasing heat shock proteins, reducing oxidative damage, promoting growth hormone release, and improving insulin sensitivity. All beautiful things. And one study showed that daily treatments during 10-day immobilization reduce skeletal muscle atrophy by 37%.
That's crazy. That's why I always recommend people who are injured who can't work out to go ahead and hit the sauna so you maintain more of that muscle mass.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that, you know, goes back to that growth hormone study. It's dose-dependent thing. So if you can deal with those more harsh protocols that are a little bit difficult on you, that's going to be even more beneficial. So lastly, we're going to talk about detox. And one of the chemicals that most people know about is BPA, and that's bisphenol A. And it's a chemical used in the production of polycarbonate plastics and epoxy resins. And so pretty much it's found everywhere in our environment. It's in plastic bottles, in plastic food packaging, any metal food packaging like canned goods or soda cans. It's in dental composites and certain resins. And it's also in the ink of receipt printers. So every time you go shopping and they hand you a receipt, if your thumb or your fingers touch that ink, it's absorbing through your skin. You can get it through that.
Those insanely long CVS receipts that could replace a blind. It's so long with all their offers.
It's like
it's
an ancient
crazy
scroll, you know. And so just know that, you know, one of the best ways to get rid of BPA and other toxins, for instance, is sweating. And so that's just one more reason to get in there.
And if you can't, if you have a hard time sweating like me, I have so much motivation to go use a sauna. And even if you're like Chris and, you know, you sweat fairly easily, you should still get it in there for all the other benefits we covered today.
Absolutely. So BPA is an endocrine disruptor, which means that it can mimic naturally occurring hormones in the body like estrogens and thyroid hormones, and it's potentially altering normal hormone signals. High levels of urinary BPA are associated with increased risk of cardiovascular disease and diabetes. BPA primarily accumulates in adipose tissue in humans, which is your fat, and there's some evidence that indicate that it's excreted through sweat to a greater degree than urine. So that's another benefit for the sauna. So next we're going to talk about heavy metals, and exposure to heavy metals in everyday products is pretty common. You know, we'll come across certain agricultural products like brown rice and other plants. There's cadmium in cigarette smoke and car exhaust. You have lead in toys. There's mercury in certain types of fish, and it's even in this dental amalgam. And some heavy metals are excreted in sweat, and sauna may help facilitate that excretion. So there was a study where the sweat, blood, and urine of 20 adults was measured, and they were looking for certain heavy metals and various other compounds, and the researchers observed a 3.75 times higher excretion of aluminum through sweat than through urine, and that was 25 times higher for cadmium, seven times higher for cobalt, and 17 times higher for lead. Yeah, so that's great to know. I mean, you know that you're obviously going to be excreting this stuff through urine, but if you can get a little bit of sweat in every day, you're going to get even a greater effect of excretion of these heavy metals than you would through urine. And PCBs are another form of compounds we should seek to detox from. They were banned in the 70s, but they persist throughout the environment. They're primarily in freshwater. Many farm fish are contaminated by them, and has a long list of adverse effects that I don't want to go through right here because it's kind of fear-mongering, really, but these are things like hormone disruption, and that would be particularly in the developing fetus. So some very serious effects. Yes, like I said, it was banned, but it does, it's still in our environment everywhere. And some, but not all, PCBs are excreted through sweat. And lastly, we have phthalates, and these are things like certain scents that are in, you know, candles, certain hygiene products. It's pretty much everywhere. You have fragrances, paints, nail polish, food and beverage packaging. Soft plastic toys have it in it. There's vinyl floor tiles, shower curtains, synthetic leather, cosmetics, shopping bags, pharmaceuticals. I mean, it is everywhere. And urine samples were analyzed from populations worldwide and found phthalates in up to 98% of participants, including pregnant women. And this is important because phthalates actually have a relatively short half-life of less than 5 hours. So a widespread detection of this compound means that there's a chronic exposure in everywhere, because it's not like people are coming across it in their lives on one instance and it's staying in their body forever. I mean, this is like these people are coming in contact with at least one level of phthalate once every 5 hours. And sometimes this is multiple sources. So it's pretty significant. Phthalates have been shown to lower testosterone levels and block the effects of testosterone on organs and tissues, and they can pass from mother to fetus through the placenta and may result in abnormal sexual development. And like PCBs, some phthalates are excreted through sweat, but not all of them. Yeah, this is all good news. I mean, if you're a heavy sweater and you can get a good sweat in your exercise and your workout, then by all means do that. But if you need to get in the sauna, you know, this stuff is all promising. And if you want even more information on detox, we have a previous episode with our friend Tyler that he breaks this stuff all down. He's a wealth of knowledge, so I think you guys should check that out.
And usually when I talk about the sauna, I often get questions about hot yoga.
Right.
And I'm sure they would have some similar mechanisms as the sauna. It's not quite as hot, but if you're in there for a long period of time, you're sweating, you're probably increasing some of those heat shock proteins. Maybe not the amount of a sauna if it's not quite as hot. So it depends on how hot your yoga studio is, right? Mm-hmm. So I was wondering if there were some studies on this, and I found two studies. Really more needs to be done. There's really not that many, and mm-hmm. the sample size was pretty small. But there was a 2017 randomized controlled trial of Bikram yoga, which is like a hot style of yoga, and it concluded that 16 weeks of Bikram yoga significantly improved perceived stress, general self-efficacy, and health-related quality of life in sedentary stress adults. Future research should be considered on ways to optimize, you know, how often you should be doing it, like what's the heat, all of that. But that was a good indication of some benefits of hot style yoga. And then there was also another 2017 pilot study that concluded a short-term Bikram yoga intervention improved glucose tolerance in older obese adults, but not in young lean adults. So again, going back to improve insulin levels that you covered a little bit earlier. So they showed improvements in adults that would probably have more problems handling insulin, which would be obviously obese adults. So there's some promising studies. Definitely more needs to be done. I'm a fan of hot yoga. I do hot yoga once a week. I would like that to be counted as my sauna session. Right. I hope so. So maybe in the future there'll be more studies done to kind of prove that. Hopefully I'm right.
Yeah, maybe they'll, because these seem like more subjective factors, and it'd be great if they go in and see like if that small increase of temperature, let's just say doing it from, you know, 98 to 102 degrees or something like that, has a smaller release of heat shock proteins, you know, like whereas, you know, the 80 degrees Celsius or 176 degrees Fahrenheit, that may be like a 40% increase in a heat shock protein. Maybe this one down at 100, it's like 5, you know, who knows? But like,
also, I mean, the length of time in a hot yoga class is an hour. So maybe that could make up for some of the lower heat because you are in there for an hour total versus maybe like 20 to 30 minutes in some of those other sauna studies.
Correct. But I also wonder, because you're also doing physical activity in there as well. So I'm also wondering if that those benefits are in conjunction of the physical activity and the heat and not just the heat, you know? So I'm reluctant to actually call it, you know, beneficial just from that small increased heat, you know? I mean, it's promising, but it's obviously preliminary and we need to look into it some more.
Still a reason to yeah. keep doing hot yoga. I love hot yoga. Chris used to go with me all the time when we first started dating because he had an injury, but he says he's trying to do it to woo me a little. Now I have to beg him to come with me to come to the hot yoga.
That was during the
class.
Courting phase. I don't need to go to yoga anymore. She's locked in. She's got the ring on her finger.
So. No, he went to a hot yoga class with me over our mini honeymoon. So that was really
fun.
Our half moon. Yeah. So maybe I have to wait for my honeymoon for our next hot yoga class.
Yeah, we'll see.
Well, anyways, I really enjoyed doing today's episode with Chris. He obviously got into the weeds on that. I'd love to hear your feedback on this style. This is the second time we're doing a podcast, just Chris and I kind of knocking through all of the mechanisms and then some of the studies around, you know, different topics. We did the walking one not too long ago. We did the sauna one. We're going to do one on gut health. So stay tuned for so many more powerful podcasts to help you stay healthy, achieve your goals, and feel your best.
Yeah, and make sure you check out the show notes on this because there's about 36 studies that I use for this, and they're all they're all in peer-reviewed journals and stuff like that. So if you want to get into the nitty-gritty, you can consult those as well.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. We'll catch you on the next one.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
Bye.
Happy holidays.